Jai Purnamaki Jai, Jagannath Puri Namaki Jai, Gangamai Jumuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Rindu Ki Jai, Gaur Premanandu. All glories to the assembly. All glories to the assembly. All glories to the assembly. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Sri Prabhupada. Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Mustafa Vishnu Mati Bhakti Nanta Swami Nityanami. Namaste, Saraswati Deva, Bhavan, Pachan, Vises, Sanan, Vasakhadis, Tony. Vandeham, Shri Guru, Shri Utapada, Kamala, Shri Guru, and Vaishnavam, Shri Rupam, Sahagujatam, Sahagana, Raghunatam, Bitam, Sam Sajivam, Sadvaitam, Sadvadutam, Parijana, Sahita, Krishna, Chaitanya, Vigam, Shri Radha, Krishna, Pidam, Sahagana, Vandita, Shri Vishakam, Bitam, Shah, Vantaka, Pujivishaki, Pasandiva, Japti, Tanapa, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
It's October what? 9th, 2014. In Radadesh, Belgium, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 11, The Transcendental Qualities of Ritrasura, which is a funny title, Transcendental Qualities of an Asura. Text 22. Pumsam kilai kanta diyam swakanam. Yasam prodvi. Dvivi bhumorasayam.
Yasam parodhi bhumorasayam.
Narati advesha uvega dadir.
Narati advesha uvega dadir.
Mada kalir vyasanam sa prayasa.
Mada kalir vyasanam sa prayasa.
Please chant.
Om sam kila kanta diyam svakanam.
Yasam
pado dvibhumavrasayam.
Yasam pado dvibhumavrasayam.
Narati advesha uvega adhir.
Narati advesha uvega adhir.
Mada kalir vyasanam samprayasanam.
Mada kalir vyasanam samprayasanam.
Yes, I love some fresh.
Pusam.
Pusam.
Unto persons.
Unto
persons. Kila.
Kila.
Certainly.
Certainly.
A kantadiyam.
Who are advanced in spiritual consciousness.
Svakanam.
Who
are recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his own. Yaha.
Yaha.
Which. Sampadaha.
Sampadaha.
Opulences.
Opulences.
Dvivi.
Dvivi.
In the upper planetary systems.
Bhumo.
In the middle planetary systems. Vasayam. And in the lower planetary systems. Na.
Na.
Not.
Rati.
Rati.
Bestows.
Yet.
Yet.
From which. Dveshaha.
Envy.
Udvegaha,
anxiety,
adhi,
mental agitation,
madaha,
pride,
kalihi, quarrel, vyasanam,
distress due to loss,
samprayasaha, great endeavor. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Persons who fully surrender at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always think of his lotus feet are accepted and recognized by the Lord as his own personal assistants or servants. The Lord never bestows upon such servants the brilliant opulences of the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems of this material world. When one possesses material opulence in any of these three divisions of the universe, his possessions naturally increase his enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, and belligerence. Thus one goes through much endeavor to increase and maintain his possessions, and he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 4.11, the Lord says, Yeya tamam prapajante tamstitai vabhajamyaham mama vartamanu vartante manushya parthasaravashaha. As devotees surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. Both Indra and Vitrasura were certainly devotees of the Lord, although Indra took instructions from Vishnu to kill Vitrasura. The Lord was actually more favorable to Vitrasura, because after being killed by Indra's thunderbolt, Vitrasura would go back to Godhead, whereas the victorious Indra would rot in this material world. It didn't look like that externally. It looked like Indra was being more favored. He was getting the opulence of heaven in a heavenly body, and Vitrasura had a demon body that was going to be killed. Because both of them were devotees, the Lord awarded them the respective benedictions they wanted. Vitrasura never wanted material possessions, for he knew very well the nature of such possessions. How did he know? He's been around before, yes. Who was he before? Chitraketu. What did he have then?
Everything.
A big kingdom. More wives than you could count. Right? And then he traveled around the universe with the Vijayadhara women doing Sankirtan. He had the Lady Sankirtan party. So he had all that. He did. So he had all this material possessions. Right? And he already knew what the result of that was. What happened when he was a householder, you remember? Right, so he had really wanted to have a son, which is part of the duty of a king. It's part of the duty of any leader, is to make sure there's a successor. It's part of the duty that you don't just resign, you make sure there's a successor. There's interesting studies about successful businesses. And some businesses become very successful under a strong leader, and then as soon as that leader resigns, the whole business falls apart. And other companies become very successful under a strong leader, and it continues to be successful with the succession. So it's one of the duties of a leader is to provide for succession. It wasn't just like, I want a son to enjoy having a son. But he got this son, and then the son was murdered. Right? Harshashoka. So he had personal experience. So Vitrasura never wanted material possessions, for he knew very well the nature of such possessions. To accumulate material possessions, one must labor very hard, and when he gets them, he creates many enemies, because this material world is always full of rivalry. If one becomes rich, his friends or relatives are envious, even your relatives. And it's very typical, that when somebody with money dies, what happens among the relatives?
A fight.
I read one very funny, not so funny story about a mortician. You know what a mortician is? Somebody who involves dead bodies. Funeral director. It's about a funeral director. And he talked about how at one funeral that there was such a fight that people were throwing everything in the funeral home around at each other. Smashing all the vases of flowers, you know, throwing everything. And it was so bad he had to call the police. And when the police sirens came, all the relatives ran away and he was the only one left. And so the police arrested him. He said, no, I'm the funeral director. So, this is in the song Bhaja Govinda of Sankaracharya. He said, if you become rich, even your own son becomes envious. So if one becomes rich, his friends or relatives are envious. For ekanta bhaktas, unalloyed devotees, Krishna therefore never provides material possessions. A devotee sometimes needs some material possessions for preaching, but the possessions of a preacher are not like those of a karmi. A karmi's possessions are achieved as a result of karma, but those of a devotee are arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to facilitate his devotional activities. Because a devotee never uses material possessions for any purpose other than the service of the Lord, the possessions of a devotee are not to be compared to those of a karmi. Kikai kanta diyam swakanam yad sampado dvivi bhumo sayam narati yadvesha udvega adir madakalir vyasanam sampryastya. So that's what everybody wants, right? Material opulences. What are the material opulences?
Wealth.
Fame. Beauty. Power. Power, strength, also health.
Wisdom.
And? Renunciation. So everybody wants these. Everybody. Who doesn't want these? That's why we've come to the material world, because we wanted to be Krishna. And being Krishna means that you have Lakshmi Devi as your consort. Right? You want to become the Lord of Shri. You want to become the Lord of opulences. You want to control opulences. That's why we come. That's what we're here for. I want to be the Lord of all opulences. I want to have all opulences under my control, so I can do with them as I please. Now, of course, Krishna employs his opulences for the pleasure of his devotees. So his internal energy, all of his energies, they're nourishing the devotees, and Krishna shares all his opulences with the devotees. Just like in the spiritual world, you can have an opulence of having equal opulences with the Lord. Yes? That's one of the opulences. You can have a form equal in beauty to the Lord. So Krishna is not envious. He shares all of his opulences with the devotees. And in fact, Krishna lets the devotees have more opulence. Sri Kirti tells the story that Prabhupada was telling him how the cowherd boys, when they go to the forest, they just have japatis and dal. But Krishna, because he's the son of the king of Vrindavan, so he has, you know, kachoris and puris, fancier food. And Krishna will switch. Yeah, he'll switch. We're not like that. Right? If I have a piece of burfi and nobody else has it, I'm like, well, I'm not going to give you my piece of burfi. So but Krishna, he gives the kachoris and the puris to his friends and he eats their japatis and dal. So that's how Krishna uses his opulence. As Krishna uses his opulence to serve all of his devotees. Krishna shares. Not only does Krishna share, but he gives more. So we say many times, how if the jiva gives everything to Krishna and Krishna gives everything to the jiva, who gets more? The jiva. Obviously. Because jiva is finite and the Lord is infinite. So this is the way God is God. I mean, God is so much like that, that he shares infinitely even with the conditioned souls, which is pretty amazing. I mean, look what he gives to the conditioned souls. He could just say to the rebellious souls, you know, just stay in prison, stay in some sort of prison like in the body of Mahavishnu, you know, just stay in suspended animation. But instead he says, oh, here's all the worlds that you can enjoy. You can enjoy, here it's mentioned, the upper and the middle and the lower planetary systems. You can enjoy all these, you can enjoy the material opulences, Krishna says. He says, go ahead. You can earn them by your karma and you can enjoy them. I'll share my opulences even with you. You know, we don't generally do that. I make this point a lot, that ordinarily we don't share opulences with criminals. Yes? Criminals don't get nice clothes and nice food. But Krishna gives us. Does anyone here have exactly as many clothes as they need to live? You're too many. You even have extra. I was reading in the Gurukul, we had different stories in the library. We had one about this little boy, tribal boy in Africa, and he only had one set of clothes. That's it. When he washed his clothes, he had nothing to wear. He had to kind of like wash his clothes while he was bathing and then put them on wet. So do we all have, everybody here have more than one set of clothes? Do we have more food than we need? Way too much, right? We have the buckets under the sink. Out in the back, all the extra food. Do we have more opulent food than we need? Do we have like just the bare minimum, just like rice and dal? And we have varieties of vegetables, varieties of fruits, varieties, kinds of apples, kinds of oranges, kinds of bananas, kinds of wheat. We have flowers. Anybody need flowers? We have flowers. And this is the lowest of the middle planetaries, lowest in the middle planetary system. Prabhupada said this is the very lowest of the middle planets. And still, how much opulence we have. Seeing the moonrise yesterday, how beautiful is the moonrise, so much beauty. So Krishna's giving so much opulence even to the sinful persons who hate him. This is one of the arguments against God. Well, if there's a God, why do evil people have opulences? Well, maybe that's an argument in favor of a kind God. You know, if somebody hates me, I don't want to give them anything, right? If somebody hates me, it's just like, let them rot. Give them nothing. But Krishna's not like that. You can buy your karma. You can earn material opulences, even if you hate him. Krishna gives matasmajirganamapohanamcha. He gives intelligence even to the atheists. But unfortunately, the conditioned souls, when we want to become God, we don't generally want to become God like that. We want to become God in such a way, as it says here, the material opulence, what do they give to us? Enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, belligerence, working hard to maintain them, lamenting when we lose them. So we're not designed to be God. That's not who we are. It's not our identity. It's not our position. And when we try to be God, we just make a royal mess of everything. Do you all know that story of the Sorcerer's Apprentice? My mother used to really like that music. There's an opera of the Sorcerer's Apprentice. So you know what a sorcerer is, right? A wizard? A magician? So this magician had a servant who he was teaching, not just a servant, but an apprentice. And the apprentice doesn't just learn the skill, they also have to do chores. So he asked his apprentice to sweep the compound. So the apprentice had learned a little bit of magic, just a little bit. So he thought, why should I take the trouble to sweep? I'll put a spell on the broom, and I'll make the broom sweep for me. So the broom was sweeping, and then he thought, oh, this is taking a long time. Why don't I have two brooms? So he made a spell to break the broom in half and have each broom become another broom. But the spell got out of control, and the brooms kept splitting and splitting and splitting and splitting until there were millions and millions and millions of brooms. And then he had to go back to his master and say, help! So we're something like that. You know, we're very small, and when we try to be God, we just make a mess of everything. And the problem is that we don't enjoy these opulences in a benefactory way. We try to enjoy them in a selfish way. Let me have more money than everyone else and more beauty than everyone else. The more opulences we get, the more we become filled with envy, with agitation, with fear. You know, another song my mother liked, she used to like the opera Porgy and Bess. That was about a poor couple, and the woman got attracted to a wealthy man. Actually, he wasn't wealthy. He was a con artist. But anyway, she got attracted to a con artist who promised her wealth and took her away from her husband. And her poor husband, who was also crippled, he said, "I've got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me." He said, "The folks with plenty of plenty, they keep a lock on their door. And they're always worried that someone's going to take it while they're out getting more. What for?" So this is the problem. When you accumulate wealth for your own selfishness, and you accumulate opulence for our own selfishness, we don't really act like God. But we become envious. We become fearful. What's going to happen if I lose my possessions? Someone's going to take it from me. Somebody's got more than me, etc., etc. We work hard to accumulate these opulences. Although, as spiritual beings, one doesn't have to work to accumulate opulences. Krishna doesn't make the surrendered souls work hard for their opulences. He just gives it to them. So, therefore, one who's a little intelligent says, this doesn't seem like a very good idea. You know, generally materialistic people, they're so absorbed in trying to become God and trying to be the Lord of Shri, of all these opulences, and they don't realize that their very desire to enjoy in this way is the cause of all their suffering. The way they look at it is, if I could just have enough opulences, then I wouldn't suffer anymore. If I just had enough money and enough beauty and enough wealth and enough strength and enough wisdom and enough renunciation, if I just had all of those in sufficient quantity, I wouldn't suffer anymore. And it just doesn't work like that, because having those things separate from Krishna is the cause of the suffering. That is the cause of the suffering, because they're being misused. It's not that those things in and of themselves are the cause of the suffering, but when they're misused, they're the cause of suffering. If I'm using my opulences to try to be better than you and try to overlord you, then they cause suffering. That's not what they're meant for. That's not what they're meant for. And these opulences are Lakshmi Devi, Radharani, the Jagannatha. They're the Supreme Mother. And a mother naturally wants to give equally to all of her children, yes? A good mother? I mean, there are lots of mothers in the world that are all different kinds, but, you know, at least the theoretically ideal mother, no matter how many children she has, she wants all of her children to be happy. She doesn't want one child to enjoy at the expense of another. So that's how these opulences are meant to be used, to benefit all living entities. But as soon as one tries to use them differently, then they cause trouble. Exactly like, you know, if you take the toys away from your brothers and sisters and you want to hoard them for yourself, then your mother, the source of your opulence, instead of being happy with you, punishes you. Yes? Everybody got in trouble with their mother at some point? She takes your toys away. You're using your toys to hit your brother and sister over the head with them, or you're hogging all the cookies for yourself. You know, and your mother says, no, then you can't have any. And the very things which are meant to be a source of happiness in the family become a source of discord. So therefore, someone who's intelligent says, wait a minute, that's not what these things are for. They're not for me to try to enjoy as if I were God. It doesn't work. I mean, we could go through each of these. You know, I'm sure we could give a whole class for a week on each of these, how material opulences breed envy. I mean, have you even experienced that? And if you get a little something, you can't talk about it. Right? If you celebrate too much, your friends become envious. Isn't that strange? Right? If you got some big inheritance, you know, we actually had this, it wasn't a big inheritance, but we had this experience in one temple. So we were building a Gurukul building. And when we first signed the contract, we didn't have the money to build the building. Anyway, somehow or other, right before the last payment was due, which we didn't have, we got a check in the mail as some inheritance from my husband's great-great-aunt, who he'd never had any contact with for like 20 years. And so we were able to use that money to make the final payment on the Gurukul building, which we were building on the temple property. And a couple of the temple authorities came to us and said, why didn't you give all the money to us? And I remember my husband saying to me, don't tell anybody how much we got. I mean, we did end up spending a lot of it on the temple also. But it was fascinating to me. I mean, it wasn't even that much money, but it was fascinating to me. You know, you just get a little bit of money, and if you spend it on something immediately, then even the other devotees, why don't you give it to my project? Why don't you give it to my project? I mean, even when we were doing the Learn to Read books, so I was traveling, and I didn't beg for that. People just asked me and would give toward that. But I was at one temple, and one of their big donors called me up. I didn't call him up. He called me up, and he said, I heard you're doing a curriculum project, you know, with thinking about maybe giving something. So I talked to him. He decided he didn't want to give. And the next day, I got a long letter from the temple president. You know, how dare you fundraise in my temple without my permission? Anything you fundraise has to be given to me. I said, Prabhu, I wasn't fundraising. I didn't even get anything. I said, okay, I'm glad you didn't get anything. I'm like, okay. So even we see this, you know, among the devotees, that there's this, that when you have some kind of opulence, that there can be envy. I did this, we were talking the other day, when people are opulent, they actually try to hide their opulences. You know, famous people go out with sunglasses and wigs, so they try to hide their fame, and rich people try to hide their amount of money and so forth. You know, even in school, if you were smart, you learned that you had to hide it. Isn't that strange? In a school, when you're supposed to be a place of knowledge and intelligence, but if you're too intelligent, then everybody will make fun of you. Even the teacher will make fun of you. Oh, well, you think you're really smart, huh? I thought this was a school. And then anxiety. Suppose I lose it. You know, I finally made €1 million. You know, maybe I'm going to lose it. I'm so beautiful. What happens when I get old? What happens if I get sick? Right? And we see some. Even I saw one devotee who had been a very beautiful model in her youth. And then, as happens to everyone, she got old. And no matter how attractive you are when you're old, you're never as attractive when you're old as when you were young. The most attractive, you know, people will say, you look very good for your age, right?
Yeah.
So we visited her. And this lady, such anxiety about her youth, so she'd had so much plastic surgery, her face was like this. No, she looked like a space alien. Literally, I mean, it was freaky. So much anxiety. You know, so much anxiety, or I'm going to lose my knowledge, I'm going to lose my strength, right? So anxiety, mental agitation, am I investing my money properly? Have I put the right cream on my face? Do I, you know, or like with knowledge in the academic world, I remember when I was asking Judhakarma Prabhu if I should get a PhD, he said, well, you know, he was one of the few people who discouraged me. He said, why don't you just write a book? Because that's what he did. Instead of getting a PhD, he just wrote a book. But he said, you know, first you'll get your PhD, and then you'll be higher than everyone else who doesn't have a PhD. But then you'll just be one of the many thousands of people who have PhDs. So then you'll have to distinguish yourself in your field. And then you'll have to write more articles than anyone else. And you'll have to write more books than anyone else. And you'll have to have more citations at the end of your paper than anyone else. And more awards than anyone else. He said, it doesn't end. You know, so I decided after getting my PhD I was going to jump off the ship and I wasn't going to keep going like that. You know, publisher perish and these people working hard to publish more papers than the next one. So mental agitation. How can I get the latest phone, the latest car, the latest this, the latest that, the better than this, the better than that. You know, we were in Bahrain and we saw $500,000 necklaces. In Bahrain, they have only real pearls. They don't know, the government doesn't allow cultured pearls in Bahrain. So we went to see about getting some from my Sheilas, but they were a little too costly. But anyway, so we were going to these shops looking at these genuine pearls. And they showed us, they said, here's half a million dollar, one necklace. So if you spent $500,000 on one necklace, how much money would you have to have? And you imagine how much mental anxiety if you're wearing that necklace. Could you imagine? Any of you ladies, you know, for the next festival, for Govardhan Puja, if you're wearing a necklace worth like 400,000 euros? There's actually another famous story. I don't mind telling all these stories. There's another famous story called The Necklace. Who's ever read that story called The Necklace? Very, very famous. Nobody studies literature anymore. Oh, my God. What's happened to society? Very famous story. Famous classic literature. This one woman who was very poor, but she always wanted to be rich and beautiful. She wanted to be grand and aristocratic. So she had a very grand, wealthy, aristocratic friend. At one time, her husband was invited to some fancy dinner, and he bought her the nicest dress he could afford, but she was still crying. He said, "What's the matter?" She said, "I have no jewelry." She said, "Well, go to your rich friend. You can borrow something." So she went to a rich friend and borrowed this beautiful diamond necklace. And the whole time, she's like, "Yes, I am gorgeous." And then when she got home, the necklace was gone. It was lost. They couldn't find it anywhere. They looked in the taxi, they looked back at the ballroom, everywhere. They couldn't find the necklace. So instead of going to her friend and saying, "I lost the necklace," she said, "We have to replace it." So they went to a jewelry store to buy a replacement. And in order to buy this replacement, they had to double mortgage their house, and the woman had to take two or three jobs. Before that, she wasn't working, and the man had to take an extra two jobs. So they, everything, you know, used all their savings, and they bought this identical necklace, and she gave it to her friend. And it took 10 years to pay off all the money they had borrowed and everything to buy this necklace. So 10 years later, the two women meet again, and the poor woman addresses her friend, whatever it was, Mademoiselle, so forth, and she says, "Oh, who, do I know you?" She says, "Oh, it's me, your friend." She said, "What happened to you?" She said, "Well, I was working three jobs as a cleaning lady and, you know, doing all these things just to pay back your necklace." "Pay back my necklace? What do you mean?" she said. And then she was a little proud. She said, "I lost your necklace that night, but we got a replacement. I guess you never noticed. And it's taken us 10 years to pay for it." She says, "My dear friend, that wasn't diamonds. It was just paste." So, mental agitation. And pride. Yeah. Pride. I am the most beautiful, I am the most wealthy, I am the most intelligent, I am the most this. I am the great scholar, Keshava Kashmiri, defeating everybody in India, or I am the great king, conquering all directions, or I am the beauty queen, or something. Right? And then distress due to loss. Distress due to loss. "Oh, I had the new iPhone and it was stolen." "My money was lost in the stock market." I know some devotees who got a big inheritance, about $150,000. They invested it, and 6 months later, they were down to $20,000. They told me they were investing it, paying the stock market, and they said, "In one day, we made $30,000. And the next day, we made $30,000. And the next day, we made $30,000. And the next day, we lost $100,000. I mean, that happens, you know, you're not laughing. Anxiety due to loss. My house is burned down. And great endeavor. How much endeavor? You know, again, I knew one devotee that he owned three houses and he was working two jobs, 90 hours a week. I said, "What are you doing it for?" He said, "I'm doing it for my children." I said, "Do you ever see them?" And Prabhupada talks about this, how he knew one family where the man would leave before his son woke up in the morning and come back after his son had gone to sleep. And Prabhupada said he was there. One time the child was about 3 years old and the father was home on vacation and the child said to his mother, "Mother, who is this man?" We see this a lot in the Middle East where people are away from their families for years and years and years and years. You know, 4, 5, 6 years just to accumulate money. So, e danayova na putra parijana. So those who are a little intelligent say, "Forget it. I'm not going to do this. let me just give up this endeavor. Of course, those who are sort of, you know, a little bit better materialists, they say, let me get all these opulences by the grace of God. So that's a little bit more intelligent than just materialists who try to get all the opulences by their own endeavor. Let me pray to God for opulences. Most religions are like that, isn't it? Please, please give me money. Please give me beauty. Please give me health. Please let me pass my exam. It was so funny. Bhaktivedanta Manor, even, I saw this one of our devotee girls. She had her exam results in an envelope, and she puts it on the altar. You know, and I'm thinking, it's so late. You know, do you think he's going to, like, change the results inside the envelope before you open it? You know, please, let it be a high score. Let it be a high score. So this is Indra. This is Indra. I mean, it's elevated. Indra's mostly in Sattva-guna. I mean, it's elevated. To say, Krishna, give me money, Krishna, give me wealth, Krishna, give me strength, Krishna, give me this, Krishna, give me this, Krishna, even give me renunciation, the best of the opulences. You know why renunciation is the best of the opulences, yes? Anybody know? Mm-hmm. Most powerful of the opulences. Anyone know? It's not dependent on externals. It's more an internal state. All the other things are much less under your control. Well, then you become Indra. But Indra has these problems. I mean, look at how he responded when Krishna took the Parijata tree, or when Krishna stopped the Indra puja. He has these problems. And even though he's very much in Sattva Guna, sometimes he really messes up. Yes? He gets attracted to Ahalya and all these, and, you know, has to stay underwater, breathing through a lotus stem, and has sinful reaction chasing him all over the universe. And he's always worried about the demons. So this is not, the ultimate goal is not to have these material opulences by the grace of the Lord. But interestingly enough, nor is the ultimate goal just simply to say, I don't want any material opulences. That's the position of the jnanis and the dhyana yogis. No, 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 don't give me, it's all a source of trouble. Let me live naked in the Himalayas. Then I won't have any of this envy and agitation and pride and distress due to loss, and I just won't have anything. You know, you see these in India, right? They're naked. I mean, they really don't have anything. Literally, they don't have it. Sometimes people say, Krishna took everything away from me. I'm like, well, you're still dressed. You know, so they don't have anything. They don't have a home, they don't have clothes, they don't have shoes. They don't have a family. They don't have a bank account. They don't even have nice food. They're just eating dry leaves in the forest. Yes? Often they don't even take care of their health. And let me just give all these things up. So the devotees are very different. The devotees say, Sambhade vipade jivane madane. That Krishna, whatever, if you want to give me opulence to use in your service, fine. You want to take it all away, fine. It doesn't matter. So how do the devotees have this mood? And therefore, when they get opulences, as Prabhupada is saying here, it's not material opulences. When the real devotees, when Krishna gives them opulences, it's not material opulences. So why do the devotees have this mood? Because ekantadhyam and swakhanam, who are recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his own. If you have that, what else do you need? If Krishna comes and says, you are mine. You're mine. Isn't that the greatest opulence? And if Krishna says, you are mine, then don't you think that the Jagannatha is also going to take care of us? Yes? When your father says, you are mine, doesn't your mother also take care of you? Is there any lack? So for the devotees, they have access to all the spiritual opulences. Kalpa Viksha Lakshapratation. Whatever the devotee, why would they be interested in things meant for overlording the world and envy and agitation and anger? I mean, why would it be interesting? It's just not interesting. The devotees look at the material opulences and say, why? You know, it just described the devotee spit on them, but not spit on them in hatred. Just like, why? You know, as we say, Vitrasura knew, we say, been there, seen that, done that. And the devotees can say, okay, yeah, I've had the material opulences in this life and another life, and, you know, they weren't that great. The best that the world has to offer isn't that great, is it? It's mixed up with all these other things. If I'm Krishna's, if I belong to Krishna, how does Prabhupada translate it? Persons who fully surrender at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always think of his lotus feet are accepted and recognized by the Lord as his own personal assistants or servants. So Krishna may give his assistants or servants, Krishna does give, everything we need for our service, which may include things that appear like material opulences to the non-devotees. This is a pretty opulent room, yes? A lot nicer. I mean, my parents were wealthy, but I'll tell you, this is nicer than my parents' living room. And did you have such a nice living room? So Krishna gives great opulences to the devotees, but they're not material. And the devotee doesn't care. It doesn't matter to the devotee. We see this, of course, with Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada didn't care whether he was in his rooms at Radha Damodar, which are pretty simple, yes? Those pretty simple rooms? I'm sure many of you have been there. Prabhupada didn't care if he had rooms at the Radha Damodar temple or if he had a room, you know, at the Fisher Mansion in Detroit. It didn't matter to him. Because his wealth is the lotus feet of the Lord. If you have the lotus feet of the Lord whose toenails are like jewels, what does Krishna say to Arjuna? By one fragment of myself, I support and maintain all the opulences of the material world. You know, all the opulences of the material world put together are not even one toenail of the Lord. So if the Lord says that you're mine, why would you be interested? So therefore, Vitrasura says, Indra, you're really foolish. You're asking the Lord for exactly what you should be trying to get rid of. You're asking the Lord to increase your sources of miseries, as Prabhupada says, rotting. So you appear to be the winner, but you're really the loser. And I appear to be the loser, but I'm really the winner. And Vitrasura is trying to help Indra. It didn't work very well, but he's trying. He's making an effort. He says, come on, Indra, you're also a devotee. You also love the Lord. Why don't you come get the real thing? Why are you getting this thing? That's not the best thing. I remember when I was first shopping in India, we used to shop for all the devotees at our temple, go with empty suitcases and come back with full ones. You know, we take orders from all the devotees. What do they want? We'd collect some money in advance and then we'd go and buy exactly what they wanted and give it back to them at cost. It was a very nice service. But so I would do the shopping in many places in India and gradually I got to understand fabric. So you go to the shop and you'd say, you know, give me your best dhoti. And they bring you something. You say, no, better. No, 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 you must have something better. You'd often have to keep asking. They wouldn't bring out the best right away. So you go to Krishna, you know, and often he'll test. This is explained with Muchakunda. That when Krishna went to Muchakunda's cave, when Muchakunda killed Kaliyavana. So Krishna says, what would you like? You can have whatever you want. And Muchakunda says, I'm not asking for anything material. He also had experience. He was also a king. He was friends with the demigods. And Prabhupada explained that Krishna wanted to test him. Even Krishna says directly, he said, oh, I'm very pleased. He said, just because the king says, just give me your service. So Krishna is saying to all of us, as it says here, both Indra and Vitrasura were certainly devotees of the Lord. Because both of them were devotees, the Lord awarded them the respective benedictions they wanted. So Krishna is saying to all of us, even to the conditioned souls, even to the materialists, what to speak to the devotees, what do you want? 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 oh, can you give me some money? Can you give me some beauty? Can you? He's like, oh, sure. But the most intelligent thing is to say, what's the best thing you have? I mean, Bali Maharaj said this to Vamandev. He said, you should ask me for that thing that's so great that you'll never have to ask anything else of anyone else ever. Of course, Bali was a little proud to say that because he didn't have that in his possession. But we should ask Krishna that. Krishna, what can you give me that is so great that I'll never have to ask anyone else for anything else ever? What is the best thing you can give me? Don't give me something that's just going to cause me trouble. Now, that's what the real devotee should do. And the irony of that is that often when the devotee is like that, then Krishna may give them a lot of seeming material opulences. Why? As Sudama Brahmana said, because such a devotee can be? Such a devotee is what? A devotee who doesn't care about material opulences at all, who only wants service. Krishna may give a lot of the seemingly material opulences. Why?
He's not going to be distracted.
Exactly. It's not going to hurt that devotee, and he's not going to hurt anybody else. Just like Krishna gave Prabhupada so much opulences. Yes. But Prabhupada neither used them for his own harm nor to harm anybody else. He only used them for good. Even karma works like that. Like you get more money if you were charitable in a previous life. One gets opulences to the degree that one will use them for good. So when Krishna sees that the devotee is very detached and really genuinely doesn't care, that's the irony. You know, when you're going to God, give me opulences, give me opulences. He's like, you're just going to make a mess out of everything. And when you really genuinely say to Krishna, I don't care, just give me your service, then he might say to you, you know, I have this service I want you to do, and for this service you're going to need power and you're going to need money and you're going to need fame, and so here it is. Of course, we also have many, many stories in the Bhagavatam of devotees who had great opulences for their service, but at some point also walked away from that. Right? All the stories of the great kings in the Bhagavatam, at a certain point they say that I'm done. I'm done doing that service. My dear Lord, even though I'm using all these opulences in your service, still, I don't want any risk that I may become distracted. And so they leave everything and take vanaprastha sannyas and go and live in the forest again with nothing to prepare at the end of life. So we even find that kind of instance where Krishna will give everything to the devotee. So we should ask for the best thing. Why ask for an inferior thing? Why ask for things which cause us nothing but misery? Not very intelligent. And as devotees, Krishna will give us. Yeah, if we insist, like Indra, he will give us these things, and then we may come to regret it later, like Chitraketu, who wanted these things, and then later he said no. So now at this birth he's saying no. I don't want these things. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much for the wonderful lecture. I would like to ask, does this mean that Krishna usually or never gives the devotee something that is very bad for his Krishna consciousness?
Well, if you really insist. So I wouldn't say never. No, if you really insist. Krishna fulfills the desires of everyone since time immemorial. So if you really, really insist. It also depends, you know, it depends on what you're saying. So if you're saying to Krishna, Krishna, I want pure love of God, I really want to surrender to you, and you're really insisting on some material opulence, then he may give you that opulence in a way that you'll see that it's not valuable. That doesn't necessarily mean they'll give it to you mixed with some kind of suffering. Material opulence has its own integrated suffering. Do you follow what I'm saying? He may give you that opulence in a very grand way, so you can you know, enjoy it to the max and see that the max is nothing. Because we say if Krishna does give material opulence to the devotees, he does it in such a way that they lose their attachment for it. But that may mean he gives it to you to the max. He gives you the ultimate expression of that, and you see the ultimate expression is nothing. Now, that might mean another few births, so you can become Indra or Chandra or something like that. So if you're saying, you know, I really want to serve, that's Indra, you know, he's a jiva. If you're saying, I really, really, really want to serve you, I really, really, but I also want this and that, and you're really insistent on me, I say, okay. Check it out. Try it. At a certain point you say, oh, but this is all full of envy and anxiety and mental agitation and pride and quarrel and distress due to loss and great endeavor and forget it. I'm so sorry. I asked for this. Why did I ever ask for this? Don't give it to me anymore. So sure. You know, Krishna's dealing, as Robert goes, Yeta Mampapadjante Tansatayata Bhajamiham, Krishna's dealing very individually with us. So although there's certain places, like here, it looks like there's a rule. You know, like even in the verse, the Lord never bestows upon his servants the brilliant opulences. It sounds like it's an absolute rule, but obviously he does. It depends, and it's very individual. So Krishna will deal with us each in a very individual way. But as long as we're also begging for devotional service, however he deals with us materially will bring us to that point. Maybe not immediately. But if you're really deeply and sincerely asking for pure devotional service, and at the same time you're asking for things which will hamper your service, he probably won't give it to you. Why? I mean, would you really want him to? Does that make sense? And that may be suffering also that you're doing, you know. Whatever we're due, whether happiness and distress in the material world, if it's really going to interfere with our bhakti, then we're not going to get it. If we're really seriously asking for bhakti, if that's the main thing we're asking for, he's not going to give us some impediment. Why would he? You know, I'm an ordinary teacher. And if I have students who really want to learn, do I give them impediments? Do I? I try to make everything easy, yes? I try to remove the distractions. Now, suppose they're sort of lukewarm students. Yes, we'd like to learn, but not so fast, and, you know, I don't want to do too much work. Can you make the exam easier? Can I write fewer words? What's the bare minimum I can do to pass the course? You know, I'm not necessarily going to sweep everything out of the way for people like that. Do you follow? Is that all right?
Maybe just a sub-question. After you realize you don't want a devotional, does Krishna take it away, or does he really want it?
It's very individual. Sometimes when you realize you don't want it, he gives it. I've experienced that many times. That once I have no more desire for something, then Krishna says, okay, now here it is. I'm like, okay. When I wanted it, you didn't give it to me, and now that I don't care anymore, now you're giving it to me. I've definitely had that experience. Have any of you had that experience?
Yeah.
So, it depends. It's very personal, very individual. I mean, he's youthful. Krishna's youthful. He's the most intelligent, but he's also youthful. He's playful. So it does sometimes happen that, like, finally finished with that material desire, and he says, okay, now you can take this and use this in service because you're not attached to it anymore. And he gives it to you. And you're like, okay, that's funny. He's a person. He's not working. He's not a math. You know, the absolute truth is not a mathematical formula. It's not some sort of scientific formula. well, let's see, if I put in this amount of carbon, I'll get this amount of hydrogen. And it's not quite like that. If I pray exactly like this, then I'll get exactly this thing. You know, that's the ritualist of, like you were saying in class yesterday, how this Vitrasura came out of the fire because of pronouncing the mantra wrong, right? A little mispronunciation. So the ritualistic activities are like that. They're formulas, even though they're administered by persons like Yamarajas, like when Kumbhakarna, when he wanted to ask for Indra's throne, and the demigods, you know, that Sarasvati jumps on his tongue, so instead of Indrasana, he says Nidrasana. You mix up the I and the N. Let me have the throne of sleep. So, you know, the demigods are persons and they play games with people's karma too. But, you know, karma basically works, you know, it's still administered by persons like Yamaraj. It's not completely mechanical. But it's something like that. You do this, you get this, you do this. You know, again, not completely. Even our legal system isn't completely like that. Or else we wouldn't need a judge. The judge decides exactly what happens, even though there's a book. But with Krishna, you know, there's not really a book. Just like in a family, is there a book? Is there a rule book in a family? Do you have rule books in your family? I hope not. I hope nobody comes from a family with it. You know, in the legal system, there's a big rule book, yes? Still at the discretion of the judge, but there's a rule book. So, but in the family, it's not a rule book. It's personal. So Krishna's the head of the family, and he's personal. And he decides. See, if I do exactly this, I'll get exactly this. I do exactly this. I just study the rule book. Let's see, if I say this prayer exactly in this way, exactly this many times, just walk exactly to this place, then this will happen. There are more guidelines and things that can happen, but you know, he decides. And he'll decide what's best for you, not to worry about it. It'll be custom designed. It won't be an off-the-shelf jacket. It'll be a custom design. It fits you exactly, and you'll like it. You'll say, whoa, this fits. You know, it'll be like, okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Kartik ki jai. Damodar Vrata ki jai.